The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Miranda Devine kicks off the show with the latest Joe Biden impeachment news. Then James Bacon talks about why you must keep your enemies close, but your bureaucrats closer. An incredibly in-depth and important conversation of how we take back control of the deep state in 2025 if we were to win the presidency. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Become a member. members.charliekirk.com. Listen to this clip. Does this not get your attention? Listen.
I was watching the other day. I'm actually not a huge Martin Luther King fan or whatever. Super flawed guy. But I was watching the audio of the last speech that he gave the night before he was killed. April 3rd, 1968. He was killed the next afternoon. And he gave this speech, and he had just been like cheating with a bunch of different women, okay?
Yeah, he had a tendency to
do that. Oh my gosh! No, he was like sexually out of control. But he gave this speech in which he clearly predicted his own death. Like, there is no doubt, if you listen to this, that God is speaking through Martin Luther King. And again, I don't like Martin Luther King's program. I don't like his behavior. There's a lot of, worshiping Martin Luther King is absurd to me. But I got to say, if you listen to that speech, God is speaking through Martin Luther King. There's no other explanation for that. And you're like, well, that's kind of consistent with what we know. We're all flawed. The people in charge tend to be more flawed. But it doesn't mean that they're not capable of greatness. So let's just be honest about it. The second you have to feel the need to pretend that you're perfect, you become a liar, and you become paradoxically even less perfect, in my opinion.
That and more. Exclusive interviews. Members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. I want to thank those of you that are becoming members. We thank you, thank you, thank you. Check it out. Members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. In a moment, we'll be joined by the great Miranda Devine. We are putting together an entire timeline. We're going to be posting it on charliekirk.com of all the different forms of corruption. It's really something. And you look at what Hunter Biden engaged in. You have some of the evidence from the laptop. You now have Devin Archer. It's just an extraordinary amount of evidence. We have put some of the crime family leaders in jail for far less. You look at this New York Post article by Miranda Devine. Hunter Biden put then VP dad Joe Biden on phone with business associates at least 24 times. Hunter Biden would dial in his father, Joe Biden, on speakerphone into meetings. According to testimony by Devin Archer, Archer 48, who is facing jail for his role in a $60 million bond fraud, is scheduled to testify to the House Oversight Committee about meetings he witnessed that were attended by Joe Biden either in person or via speakerphone when Hunter would call his father and introduce him to foreign business partners or prospective investors. Quote, "We are looking forward very much to hearing from Devin Archer about all the times he has witnessed Joe Biden meet with Hunter Biden overseas business partners when he was vice president, including on speakerphone," James Comer says. Joining us now is Miranda Devine. Miranda, congratulations on the continual terrific and fabulous reporting. What have we learned this week that we did not know about the Biden crime family corruption?
Look, I think the most bombshell thing this week is the sort of preview that I have of Devin Archer's upcoming testimony to the House Oversight Committee on Monday. And Devin Archer is, was the best friend in business of Hunter Biden. He was with him throughout all the Ukraine escapades and the early Chinese escapades. He's met with Joe Biden several times and is close with the Biden family. And he's heading to jail soon on a $60 million fraud scheme. He says he was framed and that he lost money on the scheme, several million dollars. Hunter Biden, who earned money, he earned about $200,000 from this company that went bust. But the Southern District of New York decided that he had nothing to do with the fraud, and so nothing happened to him. So I think the way Devin Archer is feeling is he has nothing to lose. He didn't volunteer to testify, but he was asked to testify by James Comer, so he's doing it on Monday. And what he will say is that Joe Biden met with Hunter Biden's business partners several times that he witnessed, including up to two dozen times on speakerphone when this was sort of a Hunter Biden party trick when he was trying to impress foreign investors or seal a deal or get his foreign benefactors to realize that he was in touch with the vice president whenever he wanted to. He would just whip out the phone and dial up his father, who was then vice president, and stick the phone on the table and introduce his father on speakerphone to the people around. And that was impressive. And I itemized one particular time that I think that Devin Archer is going to be testifying about, which is pretty crucial when it comes to the Ukraine grift. And that was December 4, 2015. Hunter Biden and Devin Archer were at a Burisma board meeting. That's that Ukrainian energy company that was paying Hunter $83,000 a month to sit on its board. They were having a board meeting in Dubai. Board meeting was over. The dinner was over. And Hunter and Devin Archer go off to another bar nearby and they get an urgent call from the owner of Burisma and his right-hand man. Where are you? And then the two Ukrainians came rushing up to the bar to see them and said it was urgent. Can you get your father on the line? So that's what Hunter did. He calls his father. It's early afternoon in Washington, D.C. Joe Biden comes on the phone. Hunter introduces him on speakerphone to the two Ukrainians. He introduces them by name and says they need our support. So that's significant because within a few days, Joe Biden, as vice president, was flying to Ukraine and would strong arm the government there to fire the prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, who at that moment was conducting a very aggressive investigation into Burisma. And he seized in a couple of months, he would seize all the property belonging to that oligarch, Zlochevsky, who was paying Hunter all that money. The prosecutor would seize all his properties, four houses, two plots of land, Rolls Royce. So it was urgent business to get him off their back. And sure enough, the prosecutor was fired because Joe Biden insisted that he was going to hold back $1 billion of taxpayer money, U.S. aid, for Ukraine.
So The timeline's really important here, and it connects multiple different things. It connects what we know with Hunter Biden, I mean, Joe and Hunter Biden, with firing the Ukrainian prosecutor. We now have Devin Archer's testimony. So, Miranda, is this a pattern that also manifested with the Chinese dealings? Joe Biden said repeatedly he had nothing to do with Hunter Biden's foreign business dealings. And not only did he have something to do with it, he was the closer, Miranda. They brought him in as the to seal the deal. They were selling Joe Biden. And it's important to note, this is why while he was vice president of the United States, is that correct?
Some of the Chinese deals were while he was vice president. All of the Ukraine stuff was while he was vice president, although Hunter was still paid up until 2019. Later Chinese deals were while he was vice president, but the money for the CEFC deal was paid after he left office, very shortly after. And, I mean, the other interesting thing about Joe Biden leaving office is that Hunter's stipend from the Burisma board was cut in half after Joe Biden left office a couple of months later. So was his money actually cut off altogether from the Romanian oligarch that he was being paid by.
It's extraordinary. So what, if you were to put this whole picture together, Miranda, are there any missing pieces right now for impeachment? Is there anything we don't know? I just mean this from not just a reporter standpoint, from a prosecutorial standpoint. I think we have a rather comprehensive and complete picture of time, place, matter, motive. So what do we have left to learn?
Look, there are quite a lot of pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that I know exist and that I think the House committees should be bringing up and will be. There's some evidence that I know that another reporter, John Solomon, is going to be bringing out in the next couple of days, which show that the whole pretext that Joe Biden uses for why he fired the prosecutor, and which is parroted ad nauseum by the Washington Post fact checkers and by New York Times, et cetera, that in fact this was US government policy, that Shokin, that prosecutor, was corrupt. Well, you know, that's not true. Oh, and also that Shokin was not investigating Burisma. Well, I mean, he was. The facts are the facts, that he was seizing all the property of Zlochevsky, and also that this prosecutor was a clean skin who'd been brought in because the previous prosecutor had been so corrupt and there had been bribes paid to get Zlochevsky off some other problems he had in England. So I think John Solomon will bring forward that. Then there are other whistleblowers that are coming forward. And look, I don't even know some of them that have come forward. You know, it seems like every time you get a very plausible whistleblower gives testimony, that gives heart to other people embedded in the bureaucracy who can no longer live with their consciences and are inspired by these courageous patriots. And the more whistleblowers, the worse it gets for Joe Biden.
There's two tracks here, Miranda. There's the crimes and then there's the cover-up. And they're both bad. And they actually work in harmony with one another. And in some ways, Kevin McCarthy seems to be zeroing in on the cover-up because that might be easier to prove. I'm actually more... cover-up is a kind of standard operating procedure of super corrupt oligarchs in D.C. What I am just shocked about is how the Bidens received cash to sell out American foreign policy. Not shocked. I think that is treason. Covering up is as old as Richard Nixon. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Every day we hear about another familiar brand selling out their customers and going woke. Americans are sick and tired of having left-wing propaganda jammed into every product they consume. Woke mobile companies are no different. For years, they've been dumping millions into liberal causes, and we had to take it because you need a cell phone and probably thought there was no alternative. I've got news for you. There is, and I want you to make the switch today. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. So you get the best possible service in your area, minus the left-wing propaganda. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech, religious liberty, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military, veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching very easy. Keep your phone, keep your number too. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today with the offer code Charlie. Ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. patriotmobile.com/Charlie. So they will. I'm going to read from this piece. They will note the context that 3 days after the speakerphone call, the then vice president, who was Obama administration's point man for Ukraine, of course, his son was getting paid, was due to fly to Kyiv to address the Ukrainian parliament, known as the Rada, on December 9th, 2015, about, quote, the poison of cronyism, corruption, and kleptocracy. 10 weeks before the call, on September 24th, U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt gave a speech about corruption in Odessa in which he targeted Zolokachensky, pronunciation issues, by name. So, Miranda, the timeline is everything. Can you just walk our audience through the significance and what is the big takeaway from the timeline revelations that we are now able to understand conclusively?
Well, it seems clear from the emails that we've seen on Hunter Biden's laptop that came from the Ukrainians at Burisma to Hunter Biden and Devin Archer, his best friend, who was also on the board with him, that the Ukrainians wanted something for the money that they were paying. They wanted some deliverables, as Vadim Pozharsky described it in one email, laying out exactly what they wanted. They wanted people, high-ranking American administration officials, to come to Ukraine, to talk to the Ukrainian government about what a great company Burisma was and what a stellar character the oligarch who owned it, a guy called Mykolai Zlochevsky, was. And so this was expected, and they were becoming very insistent, putting a lot of pressure on Hunter. And, you know, that's ultimately what happened. The Ukrainian government was taking the American officials at their word when they came one after the other, whether it was the ambassador or the vice president, Joe Biden. They would constantly lecture the Ukrainians about corruption. And it is an incredibly corrupt country. It's said to be the most corrupt country in Europe. And so the government there, President Poroshenko, decided that the Americans meant what they said. So he got this new prosecutor out of retirement, this guy called Viktor Shokin, and told him to go after corruption. And of course, the biggest corrupt company at that stage was Burisma. But Burisma was paying the vice president's son $83,000 a month. So just the optics of that is terrible. And Joe Biden has refused to admit that. And ultimately, Joe Biden got the prosecutor fired who was investigating Burisma. And the proof that that was done to help Burisma is that the prosecutor's successor, this new prosecutor, who wasn't even a prosecutor, he was a politician, he was brought in, and the company just got off with a slap on the wrist. It was a sweetheart deal like the one that Hunter Biden's going to go for tomorrow in court.
So Miranda, in closing here, what I think is a macro takeaway from all of your wonderful reporting is the attitude that the Bidens had towards their behavior and believing they were untouchable. Do you find any evidence to this that the Bidens ever thought this would be discovered, that they would ever be investigated for this? My outsider perspective, it seems as if they were acting as if they are so untouchable, so arrogant, with so much pride. Is that a fair takeaway, Miranda?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, this is the way that Joe Biden has always operated. Remember, he's been influence peddling and getting favors from his donors in Delaware for nigh on 50 years since he first became a senator. And Delaware is a particularly strange state, very small, and therefore a senator like Joe Biden is incredibly powerful, especially when he's been there so long.
That's true.
And you've got all these corporations that are incorporated there, a lot of money sloshing around. I don't think he even knows what corruption is anymore. It's just as natural as breathing to him.
That's a great point. They actually have the best anonymous LLC laws in the country. So they actually have by far the most major corporations, entrepreneurial startups, seed funding, VC. They are disproportionately filed in Delaware because they register in Delaware. They protect all of the secretary, treasurer, filer. They're well known for it, and it really makes you think. Miranda Devine, excellent reporting. We'll have you on again soon, and thank you for flowing to the next segment. Thank you. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. We are saving babies with Preborn, and now we've made it easier than ever to help a girl stand for life by providing her a free ultrasound. Just call 833-850-2229, or you can now just click on the Preborn banner at charliekirk.com and join us in saving babies. The voices on the other side are loud, and they say they're proud, and they are everywhere. Now is the time for those of us who know the truth to stand for it and to save babies. $140 gives five mothers a free ultrasound and saves babies. $280 can save 80 babies. And just $28 a month can save a baby a month for less than the dollar a day. And a $15,000 gift will provide an ultrasound machine that will save lives for years to come. Saving babies is just a phone call or click away. Call 833-850-BABY. That is 833-850-2229. Or click on the Preborn banner at charliekirk.com. That is 833-850-2229. Or click on the Preborn banner at charliekirk.com. All right, this is going to be a great conversation, everybody. We have James Bacon here. James, welcome. James was one of the fighters in the Trump White House, former director of operations for presidential personnel in the Trump White House. He has an excellent piece that I want to direct all your attention to. We'll link it at charliekirk.com. Keep your friends close and your bureaucrats closer. James Bacon has a plan and has deeply thought about how do we rein in the administrative state. James Bacon, welcome to the program. Tell us about your article.
Thank you for having me. Yes. So there's been this idea going around that moving the federal agencies outside of Washington, D.C. would help eradicate the deep state. The problem with that is it puts the bureaucrats further away from the president's supervision. Look at the CDC. The CDC is located in Atlanta, Georgia. It is the most corrupt, the most unaccountable agency, and the agency that the Trump administration had the most problems with managing. So instead of moving the agencies away, the president needs to exert more management authority over them, keep a closer eye on them, appoint people like an attorney general over the FBI who treats the FBI as subordinate, which is how it's supposed to work under the law. And that is how the president needs to treat all of these unaccountable agencies.
So I think that's a really great point. It's funny. I mean, I'm not ideological on this, but you could find an old Newsweek article of mine where I was actually openly promoting that Donald Trump decentralize all the agency heads. So let me, again, I trust you a lot more than kind of my, you know, shooting from the hip op-ed perspective, because it sounds good and it feels good. Because I guess the idea, James, is, well, you make the agencies closer to the people, you break it out of the beltway, maybe you can have, it forces the lobbyists to have a little bit harder time geographically to travel to all of them. Your CDC example is terrific. It is by far, it's its own Leviathan. It's in Georgia, which used to be a red state, and now who knows what it is. So James, build this out more. So if the solution is, what else would be wrong or a bad idea in, hey, put Veterans Affairs in Florida, put Interior in Wyoming? Why else is that a bad idea?
The problem is that it transplants those thousands of federal employees. We're talking at least 5,000 federal employees, even with the small agencies. We're talking upwards of 10,000 for some of the mid-size agencies. It transfers all of those predominantly Democrat voters to red states or purple states, and the apparatus that lobbies them will then move with it. So if you moved an agency to Kansas City, what you would have is eventually turning Missouri more blue and also corrupting it by all the special interests and the people that make their money off the federal government moving with that agency.
I think that's smart. Keep going. Yep.
A lot of people argue that if you move these agencies, some of the bureaucrats will quit. And that is true. However, the new hires will be assimilated into the corrupt culture of the bureaucracy unless you purge the corruption at its root. You have to fix the underlying problem. You have to manage the agency first, fix the culture, or else people will just be assimilated into that culture and nothing will change.
So then let's talk about what then to do. Okay, so let's start with the immediate and then we'll go to what if we win. What can Congress do, if anything? You were in the trenches, knife fighting against these bureaucrats that hated Donald Trump and all this. So two-part question. Number one, tell us about how bad it actually is in the deep state and the administrative state. Number two, can Congress temporarily do anything before a new executive takes power?
Congress should get a civil service bill ready that repeals all civil service protections. And the president on day one should say, I want a civil service reform bill on my desk that repeals these protections. On January 20th, I expect to sign that bill. If you do not present me with that bill, I will start enacting mass government layoffs through my executive power, which does exist. So he needs to play hardball with Congress, and Congress can start preparing a bill right now. You asked about what else can be done. It's a big problem. It's worse than you could ever imagine. These agencies are completely unaccountable. When the president signs an executive order, the bureaucrats at the agencies laugh at that. They look at the executive order as a suggestion. There is no guarantee that they will actually get that executive order done unless you have placed your people in that agency to get it done. So these are the types of things we need to be looking at.
So is there an example that comes to mind, James? Let's really build this out. I mean, whether it be maybe Trump's travel ban, or, you know, maybe Donald Trump wanted to build a barrier border wall, right? Or Donald Trump wanted to move the embassy to Jerusalem, or the Golan Heights, things that were unilaterally done. Is there an example that comes to mind of a time where Donald Trump signed an executive order and it was delayed, misrepresented, or done on arrival by unelected bureaucrats?
Yes, the travel ban is a fantastic example. When Donald Trump issued the travel ban, which was a campaign promise that everybody should have seen coming, he didn't yet have the people in place at the Department of Homeland Security to implement that executive order. And the deep state resisted in any way they possibly could. That meant they kept airports open. They refused to interdict people at airports. You have to get that machinery right first, then start giving the orders. Unless that machinery is correct, there is no guarantee that the executive branch will reflect the president's view.
And so this was probably a daily pattern, right? So there's the big ones, you know, travel ban, all that. But then I'm sure there were the smaller ones, right? I mean, for example, the quote-unquote anonymous guy who's a really bad guy. What's his name again, that lunatic? He was an unelected bureaucrat.
Miles Taylor.
What's his name?
Miles Taylor.
Miles Taylor, really bad guy. Or Eric Shimarella. I mean, think about this. You guys, there were bureaucrats that were spying on the president, leaking conversations, misrepresenting conversations, and it was a bureaucracy that was at war with the presidency. Can you talk about some of the micro stuff, James? The one-off comments, the Donald Trump will not last forever, the gay pride flags in the State Department, the BLM, you know, kind of pseudo-religious ceremonies through the bureaucracy. Just talk about the stuff that doesn't necessarily always get the headlines, but just the aura, the vibe, the attitude of what it was like to deal with a bureaucracy that was 99% against the president.
The biggest problem is once you get in there, there is a sprawling White House bureaucracy. People think that you just get into the White House and it's the president and a few of his top aides. No, there's almost 1,000 career permanent bureaucrats that work there, including the National Security Council staff. Who leaked the Ukraine call? It was the people on the National Security Council staff that were permanent bureaucrats, people like Vindman. They are literally walking around the halls of the White
House. That's right.
The next president that gets in needs to expel the permanent bureaucrats from the White House. Over time, they have literally taken up the White House office space and are basically spying on the president. And even worse than that, they represent themselves as the presidency. They go to the agencies and say, this is what the president wants. I work at the White House, when it's not what President Trump wanted at all. So they almost have usurped the president's authority because of their physical location in the White House.
By the way, I visited the EEOC probably 80 to 100 times. I saw Vindman. I saw these people. They walked around with free rein in the White House and doing whatever they want. And there's no better example of the government versus the president than COVID. That's where it really all came together, where Donald Trump's instincts were right. He said, well, why not early treatments? Nope. Why not this lockdown thing? Nope. So, James, let's now talk about, and we only have a couple minutes in this segment because I think we've built out the problem. What then can be done? How do you potentially marshal control or command of a multi-million person bureaucracy with maybe 3,000 appointed positions? Is it possible?
Yes, it is possible. You have to delegate less and follow up more. It could be solved very quickly. Imagine if President Trump visited some of these agencies. Let's say he visited the State Department and said, where are we on that order that I told you to enact about a month ago? The Secretary of State will say, oh, it's stuck in this bureau within my department. Okay, let's bring that bureaucrat up right now and let's see what the holdup is. Oh, he's refusing to do it. He's gone. He's fired and he's marched out of the building right there. You need to be able to walk into these agencies like Vice President Dick Cheney actually did when he was really running the federal government in the Bush administration. So we need to get much more hands-on. For example, the president can appoint an attorney general that actually treats the FBI as subordinate. The attorney general can walk across the street to the FBI and he can say, let's review the cases that you're working on. If there's a weird case where they're planning to entrap right-wingers to kidnap a Democrat governor, like they did in trapping people to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, the attorney general can say, that case is closed. And who came up with that case? They're gone. March them out of the building right now. If you do things like that, the culture will change very quickly.
That is such a smart point, James. And by the way, the most successful CEOs right now, Elon Musk and others, they use the pop-in as a way to keep their middle management accountable. The pop-in has been proven to be, it's against the textbook, by the way. The textbook says don't do it, but that was like old 1960s. We're going to talk about this. It's brilliant. Imagine if Donald Trump just was like, let's just go over to HUD. And you just show up and you just start walking the halls and be like, how's this and how's this and how's this? You just take over the conference room. This is one of the most important discussions happening in America right now, and I'm glad we're finally having it. Hey, Charlie Kirk here. If you guys love this program and you want to support this program, if we have impacted or blessed your life in any way, I want to tell you about a new thing that we are starting it up. First of all, if you have supported us at charliekirk.com/support, nothing to worry about. You guys are going to be moved on over. If you want to support us even more and say, hey, I want exclusive content, I want to talk to Charlie directly, we are standing up this amazing infrastructure. Team's been working so hard at members.charliekirk.com. Not only is it a way to support us directly outside of all of the other channels, but get this, live Q&As with me and the team, articles exclusively written by me that you won't find anywhere else, pre-show prep calls, and more. Sign up today at members.charliekirk.com. We love bringing our show every day, and we can't wait to bring you even more content that is just for you at the Charlie Kirk exclusive. That's members.charliekirk.com. Head to members.charliekirk.com today. Yes, there's going to be a lot of goodies, a lot of engagement, a lot of fun stuff. But even more than that, if you feel moved and compelled that our show is impacting you and impacting the world, it would mean a lot if you became a member at members.charliekirk.com. So, James, such a great point. So let's say Donald Trump wins another term. Let's talk about the pop-in. This is such a fascinating point. You're trying to say that Donald Trump should just, in an unannounced way, maybe 20-minute heads up, pop in to Department of Interior, IRS, Treasury, HUD, you know, CIA, FBI, and just say, how's it going? Have his vice president do that, chief of staff. How much did that happen, if at all, during the first Trump presidency?
That didn't happen during the first Trump presidency. He visited the CIA very early on in his presidency, and I don't think he went back. For example, Dick Cheney, when he was vice president, visited the Pentagon and the CIA so often that he had his own office set up there. He knew that you have to give these bureaucrats orders face to face if you want to get things done. If they will not refuse a face to face order because they know then that you have cause to fire them. They prefer to stall. They prefer to hide behind emails. They prefer to work in the shadows. If you confront them, it's much harder for them to resist you. And you start digging in and figuring out where the bodies are buried.
I kind of have chills thinking about this. So here you have Dick Cheney, who, again, not my favorite person, but I have mad respect for him on what he was able to do. He understood political power and he used it. You wonder why there's a permanent war machine at the Pentagon. You wonder why there's a permanent war machine at the CIA. You wonder who was behind Christopher Steele. 18 years ago, Richard Cheney, Vice President of the United States, was sitting at a conference table desk saying, staff here, get him, fire that guy. He was calling shots. And this is something for Trump term 2.0. And James, personnel is policy. This is something we're going to build out. So how many people does it take to reassume control of the government? 30? 300? 3,000? And if so, do we have a blue book to actually put people in those spots?
It takes about 3,000 to 4,000, but the most important are the 30 some odd agency heads that the president appoints. These are his cabinet members. These are his agency heads. These people need to be people that have proven they can handle media pressure. The only way to not get criticized in Washington is to do nothing. When these agency heads start to enact conservative policy, they are going to face enormous media pressure. That's why a lot of them turned on President Trump, because they were too weak and they couldn't resist the pressure. You need people that have proven that they can handle the heat. So look for people that are already in the political arena. You might think some CEO who's a genius is going to be able to step into Washington and handle that heat.
Yeah, like Rex Tillerson. What a disaster that was. Look at Rex Tillerson, right? I mean, he did a good job running ExxonMobil. Exactly. It was a disaster. at the head of the State Department. So, James, I failed to get some, you know, what I, stone cold killer, turning point lieutenants fire in the White House, dead on arrival. So what's going to be different this time? Let's say Trump wins. I know there's this Heritage 2025, which I think I'm on the board of or advisory thing, totally supportive of. What's going to be different? Is it going to be just full force? I mean, the media is going to say, oh, you have loyalty tests. Yeah, like you guys don't. Yeah, you know, actually being loyal to the president, like what, you know, what a concept. What is the litmus test, though, James? How do we know a deep state agent from a stone cold killer like John McEntee, like James Bacon, and like Peter Navarro, like Lighthizer? How do we know the difference between a killer and a pretender? Final thoughts, James Bacon.
You have to look at their actions. It's not just what they said. Everyone knows how to say the pro-Trump, say the MAGA, America First line now. That means nothing if you can't demonstrate it with your action. The great thing that President Trump did is he exposed the swamp. We now know how it works. So we are ready. We've discovered that personnel is the secret. We ran the presidential personnel office. We know where the key choke points in the bureaucracy are. We're going to be much better prepared this time. We also know who the all-stars were in the Trump administration. It's people you've never heard of, but who got a lot of stuff done. And we know the people who couldn't take the heat in the kitchen.
James, we're going to have you back on. We need to have a more robust, deeper conversation on this. And I think this is super. I mean, personnel is policy. The great Morton Blackwell from Leadership Institute has been saying that for decades. And boy, is he spot on. And you have 3,000 positions. If you even get 1,000 out of 3,000 that are loyal, that are ready to go fight, I think we're really on to something. James Bacon, excellent commentary. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.